Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Welcome, everybody, to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler. Excited to be here with you on a beautiful fall morning. Now, of course, some of you may be experiencing some of this fall storm. No FEMA to be there to help us. I don't know what we're going to do without the government. This is so disconcerting. Some of you may think that's a little facetious, but of course, in times of disaster, the government, we do need them. So I don't know, man. This government shutdown is pretty interesting, isn't it? We talked about it briefly last week on the show, but I don't know. This isn't a political talk show, but I don't know why I started off saying that. But why not start a show on a bad note? So there you go. So the government shutdown is still alive and well. We will talk about Obamacare here for a moment today, but welcome, everybody, to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler, your host of another week of tax and legal and asset protection and financial planning, building wealth, and better protecting our assets. Hopefully, this show has come to help you in your quest to better live the American dream. Please share it with friends and family, and you can ultimately listen to it on iTunes through a podcast format, or you can listen live. For those live callers today, welcome, and those on the chat line making live comments, we appreciate your support, and man, a lot of work goes into this show each week. So today's show is actually kind of a surprise in a lot of ways. We're going to talk about these captive insurance companies, which I know some of you have clicked on this show with a little bit of apprehension. You're probably thinking, well, I'll get the tax and legal tip for the week and maybe drop off. But please know that this captive insurance topic is only going to be a small portion of the show at the very end. I really want to focus on good general financial planning and I don't want to talk about you hear the word financial planning, you think of, oh, how am I going to diversify my 401k. I'm talking about just being good with our money and surviving in tough economic times. And I know it can be a little bitter when there's people out there doing very well economically and the economy is rebounding, but in your life there's no rebound going on. It's very challenging and difficult. So I want to talk about that today. I've got my weekly message. I went through 8 or 9 little tips and strategies that I think are good for all of us to review. So we're going to do that a little later with our special guest, Randy Lubke, and then we'll wrap it up with this topic of captive insurance companies. For those that truly are finding a lot of financial success, you'll find these very, very fascinating. But until then, it's our regular tax and legal tips portion of the show and a lot of hopefully helpful information that you can extract and use in your personal life. And so I'm going to pull out our first expert, if you will, a regular on the show, often substitutes as a show host, the one and only Matt Sorensen. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. Great to be here.
Matt. Well, thank you. Glad to have you here. How are you holding up with the government shutdown? Are you making it on your own?
Yeah, I'm surviving. I haven't noticed anything different.
Well, you know, I haven't. Is that bad? You know, we've got to be careful saying that. I know listeners of ours.
I'm not bragging or anything.
I know. No, I know anybody that's works directly, obviously, as a contractor or a veteran at one of the military bases or for the national parks or indirectly, many can be affected this way. So it is, We don't mean to make light of those out there that are truly struggling with no paycheck this last week, but it's just kind of a weird thing, isn't it, everyone? I don't know. It's really sad. That's what it is. It's sad that our government can get shut down because of some minority opinion from the government.
Right now.
Yeah, no money. Well, anyway, so rather than I could just bemoan that issue and we could have kind of a downer show, womp, 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 but we won't do that. We're going to stay upbeat. We're going to stay positive. We're going to talk about ways that we can survive. So, Matt, you bring every week some interesting tips and comments. What do you have for us this week?
All right. Well, I actually have a related topic. So we're talking government shutdown. Government running out of money, people in Washington, D.C. who are boneheads and can't, you know, come to some agreement on how to keep our government moving forward and have some compromise. But, you know, let's get outside the politics, though, because I want to talk about the government collecting money from you. And that's what my article in the newsletter was about today, was about what happens if you're in a tax collection issue. Some of you who may have been delaying filing your tax return till October 15th, which is coming up here next week, you might need to know about this, some of these process here, or maybe you've got prior years where the IRS is going to be chasing you down and you haven't paid your taxes. So I just want to go through a couple of the steps that the IRS will take you through, whether you like it or not, and some of the options you have available to dispute taxes owed or to work out a resolution if you know the taxes are owed, but, you know, you just need to get some arrangement to make the payment.
Well, I think this is excellent. And it, the timing could be better. I know many people out there are filing their taxes this week. I am too. Those that have extended, we have till October 15th, next Tuesday. So some of you may be looking down the barrel at a tax bill that you cannot pay. What do you do in that situation? So this is a very, very good conversation. And just this morning, I had a conference call with a client, a new client of ours that will be coming on for some support and help, that owes the IRS and state, you know, $50,000 to $75,000, and they're debating their options and asking for help. So I know this is a common theme. And for some of you out there that you've got just everything dialed in with the IRS or the state in which you live, please be patient. We'll share some topics and strategies today, I'm sure, that will impact you as well. But for those out there that have ever had a problem with the IRS, Matt, where do you want to start? I mean, geez, you owe the IRS a chunk of money. What are our options?
All right. So first thing, keep in mind, the IRS has 10 years from the date your tax was assessed to collect from you. So if you're starting to get collection notices from the IRS, just realize these are not going away. This will be around for 10 years, and the IRS, one thing they are not is fast and efficient, but keep in mind, they have 10 years, and they have tremendous resources, whether it's garnishing wages, liening properties, putting tax liens out there. I mean, they have significant resources, so you want to be proactive about dealing with this. Now, there's really two different ways you can go. In terms
you know what, Matt? I want to interject one thing here that I think you said that a lot of people would have just glossed over when you said that. You said you have to be proactive here. Folks, this is a very common tendency as we meet with, if not, I have met with hundreds of clients over my career that have had problems with the IRS. Inevitably, there's a common theme where we take kind of this ostrich approach where we stick our head in the sand, we don't open up the mail, we just let it, we throw it in a drawer, we throw it in a box, anything from the IRS, because we're afraid, we don't know what to do, we're just hoping it'll go away, and folks, it doesn't. And sometimes your best, even if you can't pay, being communicative and talking with the IRS is still better than nothing, and it can help out on a lot. So, Matt, I just wanted to mention that word proactive, because I think that's very important.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes people just don't know what to do. But here's, I just want to go through two different options you have of trying to deal with the tax owed. Now, these are first options of if you're disputing taxes owed. You have a dispute with what was assessed. Maybe you had deductions or expenses disallowed, or you got a 1099, or there's some issue where, you know, there's a dispute as to whether the tax is even owed. So you have two options. There's going to be an appeals process, and this is your first route of trying to resolve it. Now, if you're calling the IRS and talking to them on the phone, you can always ask, if you're not getting the help you want from the person you're talking to, you can always ask a manager to go up the food chain to a manager. And then you also have an appeals process with the IRS where you file a written appeal to the IRS outlining your documentation or records and your position, and you're also entitled to what's called a collection due process hearing where you can challenge the IRS's determination of the tax owed. So that's an administrative process done through the IRS. You can do it through even going to your local IRS office if needed. And that's your first line. It's not an efficient way to do it. I mean, this is the IRS after all. But this is the best route to start if you have a dispute as to taxes being owed. Now, if you don't get success there, and this has happened many times to me and clients, you can then go to tax court. Now, this is more involved. You're going to want an attorney involved. You've got to file documents in the tax court. There's deadlines for this. After you've lost your appeal with the IRS, you can go to tax court. Now, obviously, the tax court is going to determine what has to happen, and so you have an actual independent judge making the determination. Now, let's say you're like, okay, I know I owe the tax. I'm not disputing the tax owed. I just need to know, what do I do if I owe the tax? You know, I owe 50 grand, for example, but I don't have 50 grand in the bank account. Now, there's two routes you can go. One is you can just do an installment agreement. This is a much easier route to go, where you basically come to an agreement with the IRS about making a payment plan to pay it off over time. The IRS does charge interest. It's not a ridiculous interest rate, but they do charge interest. And you have to make an agreement with the IRS and set that up in writing. Now, if you owe $50,000 or less, you can do this relatively easy online or by phone with the IRS. You don't have to submit significant financial information or financial records. If you owe over $50,000, though, you need to fill out an extensive worksheet to the IRS outlining your assets, income, and debts to the IRS. Anything over $50,000, they want a lot more documentation of records rather than taking your word for what money you have and what income you have to make payments. That's called an installment agreement.
And I think the installment agreement is often overlooked. And I want to throw this out as a strategy for those out there that you don't want that tax lien on your credit report. You can oftentimes borrow from family, credit cards, somewhere, and pay the IRS just enough to get it under 50 grand. Send in your installment agreement. They've got to accept it. You're done. You're on a payment plan at that point. And that it can be a great way to fly under the radar with the IRS. But if it's more than 50 grand, they will ultimately record a tax lien. And when this happens, this is another side note. For some of you that have been in this experience, you're going to get deluged with phone calls and letters and mail from all these fly-by-night companies that want money up front to settle with the IRS for pennies on the dollar. Beware. It takes time settling with the IRS. You need a professional, and you don't want to pay up front large amounts of fees. We charge hourly, and we move forward and keep you posted on the progress. We negotiate with the IRS. We can help you with that at our office, and we're a bona fide accounting and law firm. So don't be careful with one of these, you know, strip mall service companies that want to settle with the IRS for you. So anyway, I just wanted to interject that again. Great comments, Matt.
Yeah, now I just want to give an example. You know, I talked to a client this past week who did a Roth conversion for their retirement accounts. They got a 1099 for the conversion that's adding income to their taxes. Now, they had planned on a little bit of that, and so they were prepared to pay some money in for their tax return. But they were short like $25,000 or $30,000 in taxes. Now, this client was just going to distribute a big chunk of money out of the retirement account and take it, you know, they're not 59 and a half yet. They still had some money left in the traditional, but they were, you know, thinking about depleting retirement accounts and getting penalties and taking that into taxes to pay. It's just a good solution to say, hey, just file the return, get it in on time, pay what you can, and if you're under 50 grand, just go with an installment agreement to make it up and pay it over time. Much easier for the client to handle than having to deal with the repercussions of a penalty and taking retirement plan distributions.
Yeah, no, great point. Adding insult to injury, really.
Yeah. Okay, last item just I want to talk about is there is a way you can file what's called an offer and compromise. Now, this is a way you can offer basically a settlement to the IRS. It does require some extensive paperwork and financial information has to be supplied to the IRS. And there's a lot of different ways you can request what this offer in compromise or settlement with the IRS. If you have a doubt as to the collectability of the issue, meaning you're just you don't have the financial wherewithal anymore to pay the taxes, or if there's a doubt as to whether there is a tax liability, as to whether some expense was legitimate or not, or whatever it is that might be causing the tax. So you have a couple of different factors or bases to file this offer in compromise, and it's filed with the IRS. It takes a good amount of time for them to process it. But it can halt collection activities while it's pending. So that is a good route to go if you have a significantly large tax bill and you want to make some offer for settlement to pay it off, which can be lump sum or payments over time.
I love it. And I'll just add one more point, and then folks, you probably all heard more about this than with the IRS than you wanted to. One other thought is I literally just had a call, Matt, in the last 24 hours with a client where they had some really difficult family situations, some disability, and a divorce. And we might claim there's some special petitions you can make too, rather than disputing what you think you owe, mm-hmm. or getting on a payment plan, or asking for some sort of compromise. The last option I would propose is that you can also ask for pity. And that sometimes is through the innocent spouse provision. You can also ask for forgiveness of penalties and interest due to an extraordinary health or employment situation, and there are options. Now, that's to maybe get out of the penalties and interest. The offer and compromise would be for the amount of the tax you owe, but there's also this pity ploy that can be used as well, and I don't make light of that either. It can be very, very emotional process, and it can be accurate and very helpful. So think about that as well. But man, Matt, if we didn't talk about the government shutdown, let's just talk about the IRS taking money from us. This is great. Thank you for bringing such a nice topic to the show. I like it. This is good.
Hey, sometimes you just got to hear what you got to hear. It's not what you want to hear, but it's what you need to hear. So
that's right. Oh, man.
I'm bringing it to the people.
You're keeping it real. Keeping it real. I like it. Well, Matt, thanks so much for joining us today. Any final comments? Any suggestions on the government shutdown in final words?
I don't have anything smart to say, so I'll just say thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you, Matt. Matt Sorensen, if you need to get a hold of him, folks, it's Matt, M-A-T, that's one T, at kkoslawyers.com. So thanks, Matt. We'll see you in a few weeks.
All right. Thanks, Mark. All right.
Matt, a regular contributor to the show, my partner in the law firm, faithful, good friend. Now, I want to hit another topic here for a moment before we get to our special guest and our main topic of the hour. And if you've just joined us, this is not exclusively going to be about these captive insurance companies. Again, I know some of you are listening to this show with bated breath, thinking, what is this captive thing all about, and is it worth my time to listen to this radio show? We're going to talk about some really important economic and tax planning strategies to survive in today's economy, even if your life has not rebounded as many or some have in the country. And we're going to make this very, very practical for many of you on the show. But as we get closer to the end of the show, we definitely want to cover this captive insurance strategy. I've been wanting to talk about it on a radio show for literally a couple of years. But I haven't turned to my expert, Randy Lubke, to do this yet. And it's also hard to dedicate an entire show to this because it really is a high-end, high-net-worth strategy, which you'll hear about here shortly. But hang on. I've got my tax tip for today I want to cover for a moment. My team at K&E CPAs, they're just working around the clock, and I just couldn't ask Dustin or Brian or Liddell or Jody, Jeremy, some of the folks that you've heard before on the show. They're just working around the clock, and I want to say thank you to many of you that are working with our office this tax season, and you're waiting to get your tax return and get it filed. I'm working on mine all weekend too. But so I get the opportunity to share with you a tax tip right now. And what I wanted to talk about, and I know it's, again, a very, very current topic, and you're going to see more and more articles about this from me as well. We're kind of waiting for this government shutdown thing to get over with, and that is Obamacare. And so I want to talk about a strategy here for the healthy. Now, I'll talk about strategies for the unhealthy more so in the future, and especially for those that are unhealthy or have pre-existing conditions. This is a wonderful thing that you can now start applying for insurance. And if you've seen some of the commercials on TV already, all the states are starting to advertise their exchange so that you can go and shop. This weekend, I was in Seattle speaking at my workshop, and it was exciting. Greg Gallagher, a huge supporter, great client, he was in the room. And while we were talking about Obamacare, I spent a whole, I think it was 45 minutes to an hour, talking about Obamacare and the strategies for small business owners, which I think many of you would find very, very helpful if you can make it to one of the remaining four workshops this fall. That's a main topic I cover. But Greg Gallagher got right on his computer and was searching on the exchange in Washington State, and he had already found the same insurance policy that he was already paying $600 to $650 a month on. He had just got for $350 to $400 a month. So he had over a $200 to $250 savings on a monthly premium immediately with a higher deductible, and it was the same insurance. And this is my strategy I want to share with everyone else here. It opened the door for him to start a health savings account. So not only was he seeing savings as an insurance premium, he had pre-existing condition issues before, which were now not an issue, and he was able to start a health savings account. This, my friends, is a magical equation. This is very, very exciting. So I want to say this again for everybody listening out there. If you are generally healthy, and this new Obamacare push around the country to make sure everyone's insured, this gives all of us an incredible opportunity to go out and shop, to shop for maybe a better insurance policy and a different policy. And many of us have been afraid to go shop for insurance because we're afraid we're going to get dropped and we may not get picked back up, or we got pre-existing conditions or this, that, and another, right? We've all felt that way. I mean, heaven forbid we go 1 month without insurance, and it's almost impossible to get coverage somewhere else because they all ask, how did you lose your insurance and why? But now the process is so much more streamlined, and I think this is one of the good things about Obamacare. Now, there's some bad, and I know it's a very divisive topic, and some of you are just livid about it, but this is a good thing that all of you should take advantage of, even if you hate President Obama, and some of you may love him, that should take the politics out of it. If you can find a better insurance policy with a lower premium, make the move. Shop. Get involved. Get engaged in your health insurance shopping. I, as many of you know, I recorded a webinar just 2 weeks ago. You can still listen to it, watch it. It's my computer screen for an hour. And learn about this, come to a workshop, I'll help educate you. Get on healthcare.gov, get on healthcare.org, get on your state exchange and read. Get a big bowl of popcorn and a Diet Coke and just sit down and study what your options are. Number two, if you're healthy, look at the health savings account option, which means you're going to have a higher deductible and have that HSA possibility, which means you can start self-insuring yourself, meaning take a tax deduction and put away money for those out-of-pocket costs. Because here's an important point. This is my last point, and then we're going to get to our special guest, Randy Lupke. Here's the point I want to make. All of us are still going to have out-of-pocket costs. Not only do we have to pay these premiums, which I want you to deduct in your small business, but we're going to have copays and deductibles and eyes and dental and chiropractic and massages and all these other things. We're all still going to have out-of-pocket insurance. This is we just didn't all of a sudden move to Canada, folks. We still have typical insurance procedures. Obamacare is just making it easier for all of us to get insurance and hopefully a little more affordable. That's the main goal of Obamacare. Well, you and I need to still set aside a little money for those out-of-pocket costs. And if you're healthy, you can fulfill the requirement of getting insurance, avoid the penalty, and then start a health savings account. It's like a supercharged IRA for healthcare. Any of you that have listened to me for more than a half hour at any workshop or event know about my passion for the health savings account. I don't sell insurance, but it's a topic in my book. And I think it is very, very powerful. You can self-direct it and better self-insure yourselves. So anyway, there's my strategy today. Get out and shop. Be patient. Be inquisitive. And study what your options may be, and I know it can impact your life in a positive way. Well, without further ado, I would like to introduce our amazing guest today, who is a returning guest to our show. This is Mr. Randy Lubke, a registered financial consultant, registered mortgage advisor, life insurance agent, real estate broker, mortgage broker, stock broker. If you guys thought I had a lot of letters behind my name, Randy by far has beat me out. This guy is amazing. And for the last 25 years, he has been helping thousands of his clients and students with their retirement planning loans and strategic business planning. He is a wealth of information, and it's always an honor to have him here on the show, based out of Newport Beach, California. It's Randy Lubke. Randy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark Kohler, how are you?
That was good. I haven't got Lisa with those canned, you know, clapping and cheers. We haven't gotten to that level with our show, but so I tried to give you a little verbal there. Welcome. Thank you for joining the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I've been listening in. Got really depressed listening to Matt, and then a little cheered up with the health savings account.
Well, I know it's been a roller coaster. It's all about it's. Yeah, folks, we're going to bring out your tears, your laughter, your all of your emotions. You're going to experience your anger in one show of the Mark Kohler Show. Well, Randy, thank you for spending some time with us, folks. The reason why I asked Randy to be with us is for twofold. Number one, all of you out there, I feel, and I am right alongside you, neck and neck, have ups and downs monthly, annually, and in our lives, we're going to have ups and downs economically. No matter what's going on in the economy around us, each of us may have our own personal economy that could be challenging or very rewarding and successful, and it's going to be up and down. Randy, in fact, if you humor me, Randy, I want to share one point here that I thought was that was very life-changing for me, and I've shared it on the show, I think it was a year and a half ago. It was at one of the commencement speeches for, I think it was North Carolina University, and I just get chills right now just thinking of it. They interviewed a gentleman that gave the commencement speech at the graduation. This is a year and a half ago, and he was the oldest graduate the university had ever had. He was 90-something years old, and he had gone back to school to get his degree. Just very inspiring. And so they thought, let's have him give the commencement speech. And they said, is there anything you can tell these young graduates that would help them in their life and everything that they're going to experience? And I almost get choked up talking about this, because they brought him out on the show, and he said, you know what I told them? I won't mimic his voice the entire time. We'll ruin the moment here. But what he said was that, folks, life is like a pendulum. It's going to swing both ways. There's going to be wonderful economic times in your lives, and there's going to be terrible economic times in your lives. But what I can promise you is the pendulum always swings both ways. It will only be for a time and a season in each of those directions. Now, that can tell us a lot about how we can be confident and look to the future when things are bad. But it also tells us a lot that when things are good, we have to remember it may not last, and we have to be cautious and careful and save. Many of us, when things are good, increase our lifestyle and don't prepare for what's to come. So anyway, for a little few moments today, I wanted to bring up some topics. I wrote 9 of them here in my newsletter today. And Randy himself has spoken on each one of these before, and he's just a wealth of information. So I thought, before we talk about these captives, insurance companies, which are really a strategy for the wealthy, and there's some of you on the show that are going to find these very, very helpful in your situation for tax planning. But before we get there, I wanted to just talk about what I think can help all of us. So Randy, what do you say? Is that all right? I know you agreed to this in advance, but what are your thoughts? Any thoughts about what I just shared?
Well, I think it's very true, and you know, it's human nature. We just get caught up in, hey, whatever is today is going to be that way forever. And the reality is, that's absolutely the opposite. Things are going to change, and yeah, so you need to prepare for all seasons. And you know, this is what you get for being 90 years old. A lot of wisdom, right?
Yeah. Yes, Vince. I thought it was very, very wise. It was fun to hear. Okay, well, I'm going to throw out. There's 9 of these little thoughts or strategies that I wanted to share with people of things they can think about when they're in difficult times. Now, the first point I made was look at the big picture. And I think we've kind of captured that in my opening statement, that we need to look at the long term. We shouldn't be frustrated on today. I like the way you said that, Randy. A lot of times we think what's going on today is going to continue, whether it's good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I made a few other points here that I think, and I'm going to jump around on these. And Randy, I'd like to get your insight. Number three on my list was make tough decisions. If you're having an economic personal downturn and things are tough, it requires making tough decisions. It may be looking at the drains on your finances. It could be making changes in relationships. It could be making changes with properties where you live. And maybe that's some of the growth that we experience when we go through a tough situation. But Randy, what are your thoughts on making tough decisions? How you go through that? Maybe some processes that you've seen other folks do. What are your thoughts?
Sure. I'd look at that from two different perspectives, Mark. First of all, a lot of times we think the decisions are more difficult than they are, meaning we're afraid of the outcome. But if you really think about, you know, what's the worst case scenario, it may not even be all that bad, as opposed to not making the decision and doing nothing, which, by the way, not making a decision and doing nothing is a decision, right? Inaction is still a choice. So part of it is, you know, just you look at it and say, all right, what's the worst possible outcome? If I actually experience that, is that really all that bad? And oftentimes it's not as bad as we make it up to be in our heads. But the second thing is about taking baby steps. Remember that movie, What About Bob?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So this is something I try to get across to all my clients, which is, you know, any action you take, even if it's the smallest action, if you do it consistently over time, two things. You're going to get action, you're going to get moving forward, and you're also going to develop momentum. And so any little step, even if it's the smallest incremental step, is still going to move you in a direction, and that's still much better than just not taking any action whatsoever.
That's a great point. And making tough decisions, they don't have to be big ones. They can even be little ones. In my newsletter today, I the final sentence in that section was, start by making a punch list of three drains on your finances and get rid of them one at a time. It doesn't have to be all at once, but start making tough decisions. Another point I made in here is, again, all over the board here. There's all different aspects here. But one thing I said in here was paying it forward. I'm going to jump to one of the final points I made here, too, as we could jump around, that a lot of times when things are bad, sometimes things can turn around quite quickly, even emotionally, when you try to give to others and try to look outside of the situation you're in. What are your thoughts on charitable giving and paying it forward and focusing on the people around you when things are tough for yourself?
Right. Okay. Again, there's no doubt that random acts of kindness at some point or another pay off, even if it doesn't, you know, there's not a dollar amount to it. It's just, you know, contributing to others and doing things for others is always a good thing to do. It helps you mentally. It helps the person you helped. It's just, you know, there's just nothing wrong with doing something good, is there?
No, it's therapeutic. It can be. It can
yes.
be really uplifting.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, okay, another item. I'm just going to jump around on these. Let's talk about eliminating debt. Now, obviously, when you're in a very difficult economic situation, debt is almost always a factor. We need to looking at the drains on our finances, but we also need to be considering our debt. Randy, what are some techniques, thoughts that you've, you know, some strategies you've given clients in the past on how to get out of debt quickly, effectively, carefully? What do you tell your clients?
Yeah. Okay. So the first thing you got to understand, and this is from like a Saturday Night Live skit, is you gotta spend less than you earn. You gotta do that. that's the first part of it. And so, you know, frankly, sometimes that can be difficult for people for a variety of reasons. But the reality is, if you don't, it's just like the government. You know, you can't take in X amount of dollars and spend X plus. It just doesn't work. But in terms of techniques of getting out of debt, we mentioned this, I think, a couple calls ago, this idea of snowballing your debt, which is, you know, basically make a list of all your debts. Based on the one that has the lowest balance first, not the interest rate, but the lowest balance, focus on paying that debt off. And then whatever that $15 payment is, once that debt's paid off, continue to take that $15 payment plus the payment that's required on the next larger payment and pay it off as well. And what you find is by focusing on one debt, you get that positive experience of paying it off. And then you get to roll and snowball the increasing payments so that all those debts are paid off much more quickly than they would otherwise be if you made these minimum payments that are required by, say, credit cards and so on. So snowballing is a great technique.
I like it. And one other thing I want to throw out is, folks, there really are some legitimate and credible nonprofit credit counseling agencies out there that will help consolidate your debt and get you on a payment plan. They will negotiate with the credit cards to get lower interest rates when you're part of one of these nonprofit credit counseling organizations. GreenPath, if you want to write that down, anybody that's in that situation, GreenPath does a fantastic job of helping people get out of debt, close down their credit cards, consolidate them, get them into a lower interest rate, and then you make a payment to GreenPath every week as they pay down your credit cards. And it can be very, very empowering, too, to feel like you've got closure, where those interest payments can just get, you know, overwhelming. One comment from our chat line. This is Thomas. And I think Thomas is just very insightful here. And he makes a comment that is literally, let me see, this is number 4 on my list today. He says, people not working can work on figuring out what business to start. Well, Thomas, that was my number 4. I say start a venture that you can fall back on. And this is where being sometimes working harder when things are bad is very, very powerful, but we have to be very strategic about it. And starting another small business project or venture that is low in capital but could create additional cash flow can make the difference on a month-to-month basis, some of these little home-based businesses. So starting a venture. And so, Thomas comments here on the chat line, sorry to steal your thunder. No, Thomas, I love it. Yeah, folks, please call in if you have a comment or concern or question, or make a comment on the chat line. Randy, you've always been an advocate for small business. What are your suggestions to anyone that really is kind of in an economic challenging time and starting a small business? Is it something you advocate, cautionary points, suggestions?
Well, it's a conversation to have with every one of my clients because, you know, frankly, if you think about it, if you're a W-2 wage earner, you're kind of on the bottom of the food chain. You have very few deductions you can take from your taxes and very little way to help control the income you're going to have or when you're going to have to pay those taxes. As to when you're self-employed, you have tremendous control. You have a tremendous amount of deduction opportunities, things that can just make you a lot more money than being a wage earner. So, the simplest thing to do, frankly, for a lot of people is not even per se starting the small business, but just thinking about things that you have that you could sell and get rid of to bring in money that you could use to pay off bills. You know, we all have things laying around the house or the garage or whatever, but just understand those are, you know, one-time deals. You can only sell it once and it's not an ongoing income. But then, look into things as small it could be, a small franchise, a marketing company, whatever, something to start a side business and something that hopefully you're interested in and, of course, can generate income, positive income.
Yeah, and Randy, you just got my juices flowing here, and I want to share on a personal note to many of you that may not know this, how I earned and worked my way through school, there's so many aspects to that. I have a wonderful wife, and we worked very, very hard for 7 years getting through undergrad because I had a small business at the time. Some of you blazed right through school in 4 years. It took me 3 extra years because I had a small business during the time, and we were living in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I had a janitorial business. And one of the best franchises out there, I'm embarrassed that I cannot say, I can't, the name doesn't come to mind. If some of you are very interested, send me an email and I'll figure it out. I had a business card here on my desk for months. We also had one of the franchisees on my radio show about 6 months ago. But there's a great franchise out there that is very affordable to start. I think it's $500. And they put you on a network for bids on commercial cleaning so that you can start your own service-based janitorial business working at night and make bids where you can make far more per hour than you ever would going out and working as a greeter at Walmart to try to make ends meet. Start your own small business and do making bids for window cleaning, carpet cleaning, and office cleaning where your rate per hour can be anywhere from $20 to $50 an hour depending on the technical nature of what you're doing. Well, that's what I did when I was going through school. For 7 years, I owned a janitorial business. Folks, I would clean toilets every night. I'm not embarrassed by that. It was a life-changing experience, and I should say a life molding experience to just put in the hours. There's many, many nights where I went 24 hours and then ended up at a class at 8 a.m. the next morning in college after working all night. And that's one way you can dig yourself out of a hole is getting a service-based franchise business going that doesn't take much to start. And it's a great way to kind of dig our ways out. Now I'm going to – okay, so one more – I'm going to ask Randy for one more comment on this economic struggling time. I just felt inspired to bring this topic up today. I'm sure there's someone listening, whether it's live today or on a podcast, where hopefully you're sitting there and maybe you're in tears listening to this, and I want to tell you that it will get better, that we I know, Randy, I can speak for both of us, have been there in our careers where it's just tough and you're in the middle of the night working at your desk, working at your kitchen counter, questioning, is it really worth it? And things will get better, and I challenge you to not give up. And here in a moment, we're going to talk about a strategy for the for those that are doing very well and very affluent. And I'm very conscious that I know many of my listeners are in both worlds. I'm grateful to have very, very wealthy clients, but I also have clients that are really trying to make their life come together in an entrepreneurial fashion, and it's tough. So, Randy, one last question, and thank you so much for allowing me to give so much commentary.
Sure.
You've been so generous. Okay, so one of the other points on my little newsletter today is I said, while things are tough, take time to get additional education. And it doesn't have to be expensive. It could be a good book. It could be networking at night in clubs, club meetings, online education. I have so many videos in my online education format that can be very, very helpful to entrepreneurs. It's extremely affordable. Randy, I know you teach so many classes. What would be your comments about education for those that are struggling economically and how important it is?
Oh, that's, I mean, come on. learning is like working out for your mind, right? And you always want to be, you know, keeping that part of your body, that organ, in the best shape you can. And, you know, with the Internet and the resources available for the Internet today that are absolutely free, there's no reason or excuse to not go out there and learn things. And to your point, Mark, you know, if you're looking at whether it's a career change or additional income or whatever the motivation is, you know, you can start today, you can do the research, you can find out how things are being done for the people that are successful, and you can do all of that for free at your convenience 24/7 through the Internet.
Love it. We are in a new time and age where that can, it can, you know, 20 years ago it was, well, I'll go down to the local community college and sign up for a class and hopefully it'll impact me, where now you can get such tailored, affordable, and convenient education right online. That's a great point. Well, Randy, any final words on this topic before we switch gears and talk about the affluent and some a wonderful strategy for those that are looking to save some taxes before year end. Oh, and by the way, I want to say this. Ray makes a comment on the chat line that I think very, very helpful. It says, reading 10 pages a day of a good book can change your life. That, right, that's excellent. And I would say reading 10 pages a day of the good book can change your life too. So make sure you're getting your scripture reading in there too, folks. A little spiritual side note. I try to get my scripture reading in each day. Ray, thanks. But anyway, Randy, any final comments on that before we turn to the affluent that want a tax break that could be huge before year end?
Yeah, you know, just one last thing, Mark, and I think it ties this all together, is, you know, in the context of paying it forward again, volunteering is a really good opportunity to not only do something that's good for somebody, but it also puts you out there in the community where you're going to meet other people that are, you know, perhaps volunteering with you, and you just never know who that one contact you're going to make, or that person you're going to meet, or that side conversation you're going to have that's going to provide that little seed, that little stimulus that's going to change your life. So I'm a big advocate of it. I think everybody should do it for the reasons that it helps to other people, but it helps yourself as well.
Great comment. Because that net is, and I thought you were going to say the word, and I'm going to throw it, the networking that can come from volunteering.
Yes,
it's just powerful. And do it don't do it with an ulterior motive. Get out and truly volunteer, and it'll be amazing what God can do in your life to bless you with new contacts. Okay, so changing gears here, folks, one of the topics today was these affordable captive insurance companies that are truly for the affluent. And I know that there's some of you listening on the show today that are making some big money this year. Things have turned around. And you're saying, Mark, I need a strategy before year end. I need a write-off. I want to do something that makes economic sense. I don't want to just throw good money at bad. And when you get into that conversation, and folks, as you know, I've kind of got 10 to 12 steps of things I do for my clients. This is going to be in that 11th or 12th phase. After you're doing all the other little things, maxing out your health savings accounts, getting your business organized, doing your asset protection, buying your rental property, if you're doing all those little things and you're still making a gosh awful amount of money and you need some write-offs, this, my friends, is where I say, call Randy. And Randy, tell us about these captive insurance companies. These sound pretty freaking amazing.
They are. And you hit the nail on the head. They certainly are made for the affluent, or at least those that are, they're on their way to becoming affluent because they have great cash flow. So let's kind of put it into in perspective. You know, what is a captive insurance company? And then once we understand that, we can really do the application as to, you know, who it's for and how you get them implemented. Would that sound like a good process?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Let's kind of explain what they are. Obviously, they're an insurance company, but it's your own, right? How does that work?
Sure. So, all right. So let's first of all just define what insurance is. I think that's a good place to start. I mean, that basic, because the talk with affordable health care and Obamacare, whatever, insurance is kind of on the minds of a lot of people these days. And the reality is that, you know, that healthcare insurance is not really pure insurance. In other words, you don't get a healthcare plan because you don't expect to never use it. You actually expect to use it, and you buy the benefits accordingly. But pure insurance is something that you purchase for covering those expenses that are out of the ordinary, extraordinary expenses, catastrophic expenses, like, you know, your home burns down to the ground, or you get in a serious automobile accident where there's a lot of injury and so on. And for those types of things, you know, you just won't be able to dip into your savings, your income to pay the bill, and that's why you'd have insurance. That make sense?
Okay, yeah. Well, insurance for bad things.
For bad things, right. Yeah. Now, the problem with insurance, well, let's just call it the extraordinary events that happen, right? And as a small business owner, whether you're an attorney or a financial planner or whatever your profession is, as a small business owner, there's all types of things that we insure for, and there's all types of other risks that we would potentially be interested in insuring, but we don't want to pay the premium for that particular coverage, so we do what's called self-insure. So let me give you an example, Mark. You're an attorney, you run a law firm, you're a CPA, you run an accounting firm. Well, you most likely have, you know, general liability insurance. So, you know, the proverbial somebody slips and falls on your business property, you'd have coverage for that. Or certainly you have workman's compensation insurance for your employees. But as a business owner, in your case being a professional, licensed professional, what if something happened that you were unable to renew your license? You'd lose your license, right? That could certainly have a profound impact on your business, could it not?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Sorry, I had it on mute
okay.
there too, so I wasn't breathing.
No, that's okay. I don't want to go on without losing you.
I was going to be a deep breather here on the phone while you were throwing that out. But keep in mind, we have 10 minutes left here on the show too, so I want to make these points quite clearly and build this. But you're right on. I totally agree that. In a small business situation, this insurance is something that we pay for in a way by self-insuring, but then do we really have enough? And we're not getting a break for it either, are we?
Well, that's the point. So in an ideal world, you know, you would be able to insure all of these extraordinary activities that that you might incur. But the reality is you're not going to pay the premiums for it because in an ideal world, you're not going to lose your license. You're not going to experience, you know, the catastrophic event, in which case all those insurance premiums you would have paid would be wasted. And that's where the captive insurance company comes in because, you know, think about it. What if you could pay those insurance premiums instead of to a third-party insurance company, pay them to an insurance company that you owned? That's the captive part of it. And as a good business owner, good business operator, if you were able to manage your affairs well enough that you didn't experience those catastrophic events, the money that you had paid in insurance premiums, you would get to keep, right? So that's kind of an ideal situation. On the one side, you're creating a deduction, an expense, because you're paying insurance premium. So you're taking the money from the left hand and you're paying it into the right hand and receiving that money and not having to expense it because you're managing your risk properly. That's how captive
okay.
insurance companies work.
All right. Now, this is the part that always scares me. So, okay, and I think everybody listening, okay, let's just summarize here. I can set up my own insurance company, so I can
yes.
pay premiums to my own insurance company. If something bad happens, I've got insurance there for these quote-unquote particular items, and I can get a
yes.
tax write-off for it. And if I don't make
yes.
a claim, that money's growing. Got it. Okay, I'm
yes.
cool with that.
Yes.
Now, we're going to
yes.
talk about the cost and how much money you have to be able to put away to make it work. But the second point, and this is probably the one that concerns me the most, let's say I don't have one of those catastrophic events. How in the heck do I get the money out?
Sure, sure. Well, there's actually two pieces to that, to answer that question. The first piece is, you know, normally if I receive money, so my insurance company receives money, that would be income, and now I'd have to pay income taxes on that, just like I would in any other business. But insurance companies don't. When they take in premiums, there's a potential future liability, and because of that potential future liability, those premiums get to be stashed away inside my captive insurance company, and I don't have to pay any income taxes on them at all. That's the
right.
first thing. That's huge.
Got
so
it.
I took an expense, and I created income, but I didn't create any income tax on that money coming into the captive. And so now to answer the second part of your question, well, what if I don't experience any of those catastrophic events? I don't have any claims to pay, right? How do I get the money out? Well, this is, again, where you can set up the benefit side. You could increase the benefits that the captive insurance company has that can pay to the owner of the insurance company, a.k.a. you. Or at some point, you may retire, sell your business, and actually close the insurance company down. And if you kept the money in there for a long enough period of time, more than a year, what would otherwise have been ordinary income now turns into long-term capital gains income, and obviously at a reduced rate. That's a big deal.
So it is almost like a worst-case scenario. It would be much like a traditional IRA, but I've converted it to capital gain, which is even better than an IRA in the long run. So it's deferred.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
And meanwhile,
so
the captive
tax
insurance company is investing those premiums too.
Yeah, now the investment side of it, money that you make inside of your captive, you have to pay taxes on the money you make from your premiums that you don't pay out, right? You pay taxes, but you pay it at a corporate rate, which may be at a rate lower than your ordinary income rate as well. So that's another thing. Or you can use strategies to invest that money where it doesn't actually create taxable income, but it just grows assets. I mean, think about insurance companies. What do they own all over the world is real estate. Real estate that appreciates in value and you know, doesn't create income per se, but that's something you could own inside your captive as well. Life insurance is something you could own. There's lots of different strategies you can do to mitigate the taxes that would be generated from the earnings on the unused premiums.
Okay, now, which brings us to the good news and bad news. They go hand in hand. On one hand, the good news is you can sock a lot of money away in one of these. So for those of you that are listening and thinking, oh, I just did some rehabs or some fix and flips on some properties, or I have a big commission, or I just sold a business line in my company or something like that, you've got some major income, you can drop 100 to 200 grand in one of these captives and get a direct write-off against your other income, which is huge. But the drawback is you do have to make a significant commitment if you're going to do one. This isn't something to put 10 grand a year into. What are the typical levels where you see people that they need to make that type of commitment to get in these?
Sure. Yeah, that's exactly true, Mark. You know, this is a Fortune 500 strategy. 75% of the major corporations in the United States use this captive insurance strategy for their business. And, you know, unfortunately, you and I aren't one of those Fortune 500 companies, and like most of your listeners. So the reality is you need to have you need to know that you're going to have an excess cash flow in your business of at least $100,000 a year or more to really make this pencil out, because there are administrative costs to setting up the captive and running it on an ongoing basis. So it's not like you set up an LLC. It's much more complicated and involved than that, and so the costs are much higher as well. But really, your threshold is about $100,000 or more that you would have in excess cash flow that you could put into the captive on an ongoing basis. And taking that step forward, there's no limit. There's no top end limit to it like there would be with a pension plan or 401k. You know, as long as you have legitimate risks, you can pay premiums into your captive insurance company.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to restate it one last time for everybody, is that if you're having a successful year, this is a strategy you can employ on top of your probably retirement plan strategy, your real estate investing strategy, or your healthcare strategy. Once you're taking care of the basics at home and you're making even more money and don't want to pay a ton in taxes, and I have many of those clients that walk in our door every day that are doing very, very well, I think affordable captives are a viable option. And
So you hit the nail on the head, and the other thing is they provide tremendous asset protection, and they're great tool for estate planning because, again, the captive could be owned outside your estate, and what a great way to take money that would otherwise maybe be limited to, you know, several thousand dollars a year and then put it into your captive at the rate of several hundred thousand dollars a year.
Yeah, and on this note, Randy, you sent me a phenomenal, I know when I asked you to be on the show, one of the brochures that really has a lot of FAQ, frequently asked questions, and comments on these captive insurance companies. I thought that was a wonderful brochure. It was, you know, it's about 7 pages long, 8.5 by 11 inch sheet of paper. I mean, this is good stuff. Randy, how do people get a hold of you, and how can they get more information about this?
So the easiest way to get a hold of me, Mark, would be to send an email to Randy@lifetimeparadigm.com. Lifetime, LIFETIME, and Paradigm is PARADIGM.com. Or you could always go to my website, lifetimeparadigm.com, or you can call me at 800-810-1736. Three ways.
Okay, let's say that. Let's repeat that phone number, 800-810-1736.
That's it.
Okay. Folks, Randy Lupke, a huge asset to many of our clients and just a wealth of information, a great loan officer, a great financial advisor, and I should say a captive expert. So, Randy, thanks for being on the show with us today. I truly appreciate it.
And you're welcome, Mark. It's always enjoyable, and I hope your listeners got some value out of our conversation.
Yeah, well, I hope so too. I'm sure I did. And I thought we covered both the affluent and the struggling topic. And Randy, we hope to have you back soon. Thank you so much.
Look forward to it, Mark. Thank you.
You bet. Well, folks, a couple final comments is, please, continue your education. Consider coming out to one of the fall workshops, last four of the year. I'll be in Chicago in 2 weeks, New York 2 weeks after that, then back to Orange County, and December 7th in Hawaii. Please come join me in Honolulu. Friday night before that workshop, we're going to be surfing on the North Shore for those that want to go out and barbecue and surf. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week, and I'll see you next Tuesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.